to Floyd Bennett Airport in record time. And I know that Mr. Hughes is very, very, very anxious to get in New York as soon as he possibly can. The people have surged out onto the ramp here just as close as they can to the flyers and the navigators and the radio men, and they're crowding around them trying to get autographs and so forth. And we're going to see if we can't get the police to drive them back just a little bit if we can. It's quite hard to see. We can't see anything. I'm not any taller than any of the rest of them. They're all standing on their tiptoes as I am, trying to get in there just as close as they possibly can. And we can't see any more than the people right up next to us. We're hampered here with a slightly short cord. There are people standing all over us, and that doesn't help a bit. Police now are forcing the people back again, and that will help us. Mr. Hughes is still talking with officials of the gasoline company and watching very diligently the operations of refueling. The other four men are out in front of the ship, seeing that everything is done as is supposed to be. According to schedule, we can't say definitely just exactly what has happened, why contact hasn't been made within the last six hours, and we're going to find out if we can get one of the five men over here to speak to us. I'm sure that he can tell us why contact wasn't made. If contact had been made, perhaps we could have made a little better preparation here for the broadcast, but it was all so instantaneous, and we happened to be lucky enough to be on the spot when Mr. Hughes first circled the field. He came in from the northwest, flying, we should say, the first circle at about 500 to 800 or 1,000 feet, circled the Will Chamberlain Field, and on the second trip around came in from the southeast, heading into the northwest wind, which is now on the ground here, registering on the anemometer at approximately 12 miles per hour. The ceiling here is almost unlimited. There are a few scattered clouds at about 1,000 feet, which doesn't seem to affect the flying of this type of ship because, of course, they fly at higher altitudes. We had a report, the last report that we had when Mr. Hughes made contact here in the northwest, that he was flying at 14,000 feet using the oxygen tanks for he and the four companions. Mr. Hughes at that time was at the controls. We couldn't tell when the ship came in. He came in into the sun, rather, and we were unable to tell just exactly who was at the controls at the time, but we imagine that it was Mr. Hughes. We expect that refueling is now progressing quite rapidly. Apparently, the one truck is completely exhausted of its gasoline, and the other one has pulled into its place, and the hoses are in place now, and they're starting on the second load of gasoline that's going into the airplane. We can't see four of the men. We don't see now. I believe that I saw one or two of them sneak around the back end of the airplane to try to sneak into the administration building. I imagine to wash their face, wash their hands, get a cup of coffee or something. But Mr. Hughes is still standing there talking to the gasoline men officials and keeping a sharp lookout on the trucks and the pumps, seeing that everything is being done as he has wanted it to be done. Mr. Hughes is coming down this way now, and I'm going to try to get him to say just a few words to you friends of the Mutual Broadcasting System. He has a smile on his face, a bright smile, and when he smiles, he doesn't seem to be as tired as he usually is. Mr. Hughes. Mr. Hughes is standing here by my side. I have my hand on his arm, and he says he doesn't want to say a word. Mr. Hughes, won't you say just a word in Mutual Broadcasting?
Say hello to the folks back home. Say hello to the folks back home.
He says he won't say hello to the folks back home, but I know he means that he's tired, and he's hoping that things will get done here just as fast as they possibly can so that he can get on his way. There are two or three officers standing by. We're still going to try to get him to say just a word. Yes, but he was on in Fairbanks, Alaska, in the Mutual Broadcasting System, and WDZY carried it. And Mr. Hughes is going out front again by the gas trucks to see that everything is operating as it's supposed to be there. And Mr. Hughes has just told the officers to order people off of the field, and we imagine that refueling operations are nearing its end, and he's expecting to start the motors for the takeoff. And we don't see any of the other men of the crew. We don't see any of the other men at the crew at the present time, but we're going to see if we can't locate one of them. We'll just send a man to see if we can get somebody else on the crew. Here's a gentleman from the gasoline company. The gentleman from the gasoline company says he doesn't have a thing to say. He's too busy. And we're trying to get one of the members of the crew, but they all seem so busy, they're trying to get out of here in just record time, and it appears that they are doing that. Their tanks are nearing a fulfillment point, and the pumps now are slowing down, so evidently they are just about full. I see the men on top of the wing, and they have stopped the gasoline flow into the tanks. And that must mean that they are nearly full. Oh, he has placed it into another tank now and is putting just a little bit more in that tank, squeezing every extra drop that they can into that tank. Mr. Hughes has ideal flying conditions here. He has a good tailwind, about a 12-mile tailwind here on the ground. We don't have the exact figures what the tailwind is up where he will be flying, anywhere from 8 to 10 or 15,000 feet, but we know that the flying conditions here on the field, the takeoff conditions will be ideal, and he will get off in record time. The pumps have completely stopped now. They're going to try to squeeze another drop into the other tank that they thought was full a moment ago. They have lowered the hose into that tank and are squeezing just another drop into it. Every drop counts on this record trip. And we know that those extra drops will be insurance that Mr. Hughes will be into Floyd Bennett Field. And we hope this afternoon, and the throng in New York is waiting for him to greet him with open arms. The pumps have stopped now. Everybody is ordered back off the field. The truck is beginning to roll up its hose, and the motor is started preparatory to pull away from the front of the airplane, and the windows of the cockpit are being wiped off. The ship is being wiped off. There are approximately 10 to 15 men clambering around the ship. They look like more or less flies on there, doing everything they possibly can to aid the round-the-world flight of Mr. Hughes and his four companions. The tires are being checked. Everything is in readiness. And as soon as Mr. Hughes and his four companions climb into the cockpit, they will be off. There are two of them standing over here by the ship now. We're going to see if we can get one of them to come over. They seem to be standing over there pretty much in obscurity, but we would like to get one of them over just to say a word. One of them is standing there. He says that I should tell somebody else to come up. One of the men is coming over this way. I can't seem to get close enough to him. He's going to get one of the other men. He's going to try to get one of the other men to come up here and say just a word to me. The Navy men and the police have ordered everybody back, but we're going to stay out here just as long as we possibly can to try to get just one of the men out here to say a word to you. We know that you're all dying for that one word from someone of the crew, and I don't know which one of the men of the crew this is, but will you tell which one of the men of the crew you are? And the Mutual Broadcasting System and WDGY are wondering why the contact wasn't made, or why we didn't have word of contact in the last 6 hours.
Well, we were pretty tired, and some of our radio equipment was giving us trouble. In fact, we lost our antenna. That's one thing.
Oh, I see. In other words, you had trouble with that antenna that you had over in
Siberia in Russia, is that it? Well, we're glad that you arrived safely here, and is your time, the time that you landed here, is that just about the time that you figured, or are you ahead or behind the time that you had planned?
Tell you truthfully, I don't know. I haven't checked that myself.
You haven't checked that?
I think we're a little behind time.
You think you're a little behind?
Would you mind
telling me just which one of the crew you are?
I'm a flight mechanic.
You're the flight mechanic. And co-pilot. Would you tell me which one, who was it, was at the controls when you landed here? I wasn't able to see. You came in
Mr.
against
Hughes.
The sun. Mr. Hughes was at the controls.
Yeah.
I thought he probably would be. And you think that you are possibly just a little bit behind time. Do you think that you will be able to make that time up between here and Floyd Bennett Field?
I think so.
You think you will be. And weather conditions here seem to be pretty fair, do they not?
You bet.
And you think that you'll be in to greet the folks in New York sometime when?
On the next 8 hours, I guess.
Within the next eight or 10 hours. In other words, you'll be in there sometime this evening.
Yeah.
Well, I know that the people in New York are just dying to see you back, and we're awfully glad that you did come here, and we hope that everything fares well between here and New York, and there's no reason why it shouldn't. It has this far, and with this beautiful ship that you have and the speedy refueling job that was done here. Incidentally, speaking of this refueling job, was that about as good a time as you've made anywhere else in refueling?
That was very good.
That was a good refueling job.
Okay.
In other words, Walt Chamberlain Field and the boys here are pretty efficient. Is that right?
Well, yeah, absolutely. Right on the spot.
That's a big process.
Right on the spot. And the cameraman over here would like to get a picture of you.
Get the rest of it.
Well, I've been trying to get the rest of the gang over here, but I don't seem to be very good at it. Maybe you can get the other boys over.
Are you going to check that tank, the inside, the left wing tank?
One of the men from the gasoline company is talking to him now and asking him, is he going to check the tanks? And we imagine that he will. All efficiency is taking place here on the flight, and evidently they will check thoroughly to see that all tanks are full of the capacity. And he, as he stated, it was a record time refueling job, and we're very proud of that here at Walt Chamberlain Airport. The crowd has been pushed back as far as possibly now, and we expect that the batteries will be rolled out here shortly.
Mr. Thurlow of the crew, who's now a few feet from here, says you want...
Mr. Thurlow, one of the boys on the crew, says he wants to give his best luck to his wife, and he will be with her in a few hours.
Well, we will convey that to Mrs. Thurlow, and we know that she is listening to the Mutual Broadcasting System. She will be very happy to hear those words, that he will be with her in a few hours. And I can see Mr. Thurlow through the people that are crowded around the ship, and all that seems to be wrong with him is that he needs a shave. And possibly he could have his face washed a little bit, but I think that Mrs. Thurlow will still be standing there with open arms, ready to grab him the minute he lands there. And for the time that they have been out of New York and the time that they have been flying, and I know that if they have had any shut-eye, it has been very brief and interrupted, and they haven't done much sleeping or really resting. And they seem to be in very good shape. They all have their ties on and their collars open. I imagine it's quite warm in the ship with five men in the ship and all the equipment and gasoline that they do have in there, the transmitters and radio receivers, the tubes giving off heat. It's been stated that the transmitter was giving them just a little trouble. We're going to kneel down here now so that the newsreel cameraman can get a shot or two of the ship and the crew standing around the door. And our vantage point here is very good. We're right close to the ship. And the ship looks in perfect condition. There doesn't seem to be a thing that is wrong with it, except we notice that the trailing antenna on the ship is missing. On all ships of this type that have the type of radio that they have, there is a trailing antenna. I see that it is missing. One of the members of the crew that we had on the air stated that they lost their antenna. That's one of the reasons why contact wasn't made. We expect that that they will be able to make some sort of contact between here and New York without that antenna. And if not, I imagine that emergency antenna will be placed on the ship. There's a great ovation going up here. Mr. Hughes is coming out of the administration building. We're going to try to get him to say just a word if we possibly can. Mr. Hughes has the weather reports, the latest weather reports in his hand, and is stepping over to his ship and going right in the ship without saying a word to anybody. He says goodbye, and he bids goodbye, tips his hat to everybody here at Walt Chamberlain Field. With a smile on his face, he climbs in his ship and on his way up to the cockpit. And the other members of the crew are crowding around the door, ready to enter. As soon as they can make the clearance there in the doorway. Things are pretty well crowded up there, and they seem to be fairly cramped. One of the members of the crew comes out with a long rope and a leather thong on the end of that, a leather holster, we might say, that evidently fits over the tip of the propeller preparatory to cranking that motor, or as they say in the airplane jargon, winding it up. And that motor, tip is being placed over the end of the propeller now, and several men are taking a good firm hold on the rope. The mechanic is directing the operations of winding the ship up, and Mr. Hughes has placed himself firmly in the cockpit now, and has his hat on, smiling out at the crowd, and waiting for the word that the propeller will be spun. Everything is made readiness now. The mechanic is directing the operations of spinning the propeller. Several hands are being lent to the rope. Cars being moved out of the way so that they get a full purchase on the propeller. The mechanic walks over to the right-hand motor, so that he can see that everything is in readiness there. And he calls switch off to Mr. Hughes. And evidently he's going to prime the motor just a little bit. He asks Mr. Hughes if he needs to prime it. And Mr. Hughes says something that we can't hear. But he is going over to prime the motor. He wiggles the propeller back and forth and makes a half turn with it before he puts the leather thong back on. The motor is primed. One of the other men from Northwest Airlines has gone out there to help the mechanic turn the propeller over and see if they can help prime it a little bit. I can see their legs. They're pulling vigorously on those motors. They have a terrific compression, I can imagine. And there are two men working on the motor now, each one of them grabbing a blade simultaneously and pulling that motor around, priming it. The leather holster is being slipped over the end of the blade now, and the men are taking a firm hold on the rope. The gasoline man is there, seeing that if he can be of assistance. The mechanic is out underneath the blades of the propeller, waiting for the word contact from Mr. Hughes. The Navy men are helping direct operations here. The mechanic is out there getting his full instructions from Mr. Hughes. Everybody is ready on the long end of the rope, waiting for the signal from the mechanic to say, go ahead, give her a tug. Contact has been called to Mr. Hughes. He hasn't repeated the word yet. We're waiting. Contact has been called twice to Mr. Hughes. He ignores it. Evidently, he isn't prepared in the cockpit. He's waiting. Slack has been called on the rope. The mechanic hollers up to Howard. He says, hey, Howard. Everything is prepared now. Howard says, okay, give her a pull. And they give it a pull. Mechanic is over there. and the right motor starts as the mechanic lets go of the propeller. The rope is connected with a shock cord. The rope is connected with a shock cord. The boys pulled the shock cord back as the mechanic held it. He held it, and Collar's contact with the Hughes answers. He lets go of the holster, and the motor starts very nicely. Mr. Hughes is trying to call attention now to some men standing out in front of the airship, and they're calling for everybody to back up, back out of the way. We're going to move back just a little bit. That you can hear the left motor starting from inertia. He has an inertia starter on both motors, I should imagine, but in order to get up the power enough to get one motor started, he has to crank it by hand. I can imagine that it's quite deafening in your ears. It is in mine. Mr. Hughes is in all readiness now in the cockpit of the ship. The other members of the crew are climbing in. Last snapshots have been taken. Dr. Young has bid farewell to the Hughes flyer for the Mutual Broadcasting System, and we're speeding them on their way. The door has been closed. The motors are being wrapped up now, preparatory to moving out just as far as they possibly can onto the field. We turn our back while the plane blasts its wind back at us. The propeller wash has been blowing it back at us, and we close our eyes and turn our back to it. And I imagine that you felt or heard the noise in the microphone. As the Navy man just said to me, he said, just try to keep the crowd back. They want to get out on the field just as far as they possibly can to see what is going on. We're going to move over here now where we can get up on something high where we can see the complete takeoff. And if we can get this boy to step down here so that we can get up here and see what is going on out there where Mr. Hughes has taxied over to the runway that runs from northwest to southeast, and he's on the long runway of northwest that Northwest uses. He's taxiing out there now. There are men directing them from above. The cameramen are out there getting the last picture as they take off. The ship taxiing down the runway very nicely, and it is a beautiful sight here in this bright early morning sunlight to see this immense ship and those five stalwart men in that ship on the final leg of the journey which they have made around the world. And it is something to see this final takeoff. It's remarkable, the stamina and the grit that these men show when they have landed here, refueling taking place, and taken off in record time. We're going to try to get the official time as soon as Mr. Hughes' wheels leave the ground. We're going to try to get the official time for you of the period between takeoff and landing, or landing and takeoff, I should say. I'm getting the cart before the horse. We're going to try to get the official time from the official timekeeper and a word from him if we can. The runway is pretty well lined with people. I would say there's anywhere from 5,000 to 10,000 people out here to see Mr. Hughes take off. And when he landed, there didn't seem to be one-tenth of the crowd there is now, but when they heard it was Mr. Hughes that landed, everybody thronged to the Old Chamberlain Airport. And it has been an honor for we of Minneapolis and Old Chamberlain Field to have the privilege of witnessing this landing of Mr. Howard Hughes and his four stalwart companions on this round-the-world history-making flight that he has made. This, incidentally, is the first stop in the United States that Mr. Hughes has made. I should have known that. The stop that he made in U.S. territory was in Fairbanks, Alaska. Last evening, Mr. Hughes landed there at 6:21, and he took off from there at 7:36. That is the official landing and takeoff time. Mr. Hughes raises the tail on his ship now. He's roaring down the runway. The wheels have left the runway already. He's flying at a level speed along the runway, and he's trying. He's pulling, and he's going. And he's off, he clears the fence, he clears the telephone wires, and Mr. Hughes and his four companions are on their way to Floyd Bennett Airport, and we of Minneapolis bid them Godspeed and the best of luck between here and Minneapolis. He's taken off into the northwest. He's flying against the wind right now. He will turn and head toward New York in with the tailwind. And we of WDGY and the Mutual Broadcasting System have been pleased to present the landing and takeoff, Mr. Howard Hughes and his four companions. WDGY and the Mutual Broadcasting System are endeavoring now to get the official timekeeper here for the official ground time, the elapsed time, and all of the data that we can get for you. And we're going to try to get every bit of information that we can so that you will be posted on Mr. Hughes' flight from here to Floyd Bennett Airport. And he is going to make Floyd Bennett Airport his next stop, making two stops in the United States, one here at Wall Chamberlain Field in Minneapolis, and the other his home airport, Floyd Bennett Field in New York. And I know that everybody from the World's Fair, the 1939 World's Fair in New York, will be there to greet him. And we again say that we have been privileged and we appreciate the opportunity to present the broadcast of this landing and takeoff. A gallon and a half of oil was drained out of the right engine. And 750 gallons of gasoline were loaded into the ship. Evidently, the oil that they drained out of the right motor was replaced. I should imagine that it would be. Probably they drained to change oil. You must hear the Northwest Airlines men ordering everybody off of the ramp. They are expecting a regular scheduled flight of their ship, which was delayed and had to circle west of Minneapolis for the takeoff and landing of Howard Hughes. They were considerate enough to delay one of their scheduled transport runs enough so that Mr. Hughes will have no difficulty in taking off from Lord Chamberlain Field in record time. We're going to turn you back to our studios now for just a moment while we attempt to get the official times. We'll return to the field here in about 5 minutes.
Please step to the half of the right, Carter.
We'll return to the air in just a few moments. Return you now to our studios. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System. Thank you again, ladies and gentlemen, from Wall Chamberlain Airport. Howard Hughes has taken off from the airport. He took off at 11 and one half minutes past 8 o'clock this morning after he had landed here at 7:38. The wheels touched the ground at 7:38, and they were off of the ground at 11 and one half minutes past 8. We have with us now the official timekeeper and manager of Wall Chamberlain Airport, Mr. L.D. Hammond. I'm going to have him say just a word to you. Mr. Hammond, would you step over here, please? This is the Coast to Coast Network of the Mutual Broadcasting System, and all concerned, all listening, are interested in what you have to say about the Howard Hughes flight. It was quite a surprise to we here at the airport, was it not?
I'll say it was.
We didn't know where a time whether it was coming in or not. Can you tell us give us some of the official figures, Mr. Hammond, of the landing and takeoff and refueling?
Well, my official figures for the National Aeronautic Association show that his wheels landed at 7:38, and he taxied up in front of the administration building and cut his motors at 7:40. Then he fueled up here, and at 8:08, he started to taxi out, and at 8:11, he started his actual takeoff.
He started his actual takeoff. It took him a minute to taxi down the runway. You told me that before when I was talking to you a minute ago. It took him a minute to taxi down the runway, and we assumed that it would take him about half that time, or we'll say roughly half a minute to take off.
That's close enough, because he ran the full length right practically on the ground.
He ran the full length practically on the ground. We noticed that. I thought there was one time out there, it looked like his wheels were off the ground, but it was runway that I was seeing between the grass and the wheels that I thought was air, but it wasn't air, it was concrete, good solid concrete we have here at Mutual, Will Chamberlain Airport. Well, I thank you very, very much, Mr. Hammond, for coming over and giving us the official figures. Mr. L.D. Hammond of the Minneapolis Airport, the manager and official timekeeper of the Hughes landing here at Will Chamberlain Field. Incidentally, I have a figure or two that I would like to give to you now. Mr. Hughes loaded his plane with 750 gallons of 100-octane gasoline, a special gasoline that was shipped in here in hermetically sealed 50-gallon drums, especially for this flight. Mr. Hughes needed a special high-octane gasoline for the powerful motors that he has in his Lockheed ship, and he took off for Floyd Bennett Field, and in record refueling time. Incidentally, they drained 1.5 gallons of oil from the right motor. Why they did that, I couldn't say. I imagine that the oil was leaking out. There had too much oil in there, and they had to drain 1.5 gallons of oil out without putting extra oil in. And here is another gentleman that helped refuel. And how did you feel, sir, about helping refuel Mr. Hughes' ship?
It's quite a thrill.
You had quite a thrill. I imagine it would be quite a thrill even to put your hands on that glistening bullet. Is that right?
Yeah, of course, we use the same type of ship, you know.
You use the same type of ship, but he had equipment and special tanks in that ship that you don't have in your regular transport ship.
Right.
Is that right?
That's right.
Maybe you can give me a figure or two that we don't already have. Do you know what the horsepower rating that those motors have that Mr. Hughes has on his ship?
Gee, I couldn't tell about his unless they're exactly like ours. Yeah, I'm not sure.
You're not sure?
Ours are rated at 850.
Yours are rated at 850.
And I imagine with his gasoline, it'd be quite a bit higher than that, maybe 50 horsepower higher.
Maybe 50 horsepower higher. Well, it could be higher than that, isn't that true?
Well, possibly.
Possibly.
I don't think a great deal, though, because it was probably 900 at sea level.
900 at sea level. Well, anyway, we got him in here and out of here in record time, didn't we? And that's something that you can tell your grandchildren that you helped refuel Howard Hughes' ship when he landed here at Will Chamberlain Field on his last leg on his round-the-world flight. And I thank you very, very much. Here's a man by the name of Mr. I.N. Benjamin, Industrial Lubricants Department of the Saucony Vacuum Oil Company, who had a great deal, I know, to do with the excellent refueling job that was done here at Will Chamberlain Field. And Mr. Benjamin, all right, have you anything to say about the job that was done here at Will Chamberlain?
I've been a little bit excited, and I can't get it quite collected. It was nice to have even a small part in such a historic event, and the gentlemen aboard the ship were very much pleased with the service they got in general at the field, and here's Godspeed, and we hope they make it across the lakes in beautiful shape.
That's our wishes too, Mr. Benjamin, and I thank you very much. We had, as you people who have been tuned in to Mutual Broadcasting System and WDGY know, we had the flight mechanic of the trip who spoke to us, and he said at the time that he thought they were just a little bit late on their schedule, but he expected that they would make it up between here and Floyd Bennett Field in New York. And with all everything going as should be and expected, they will land somewhere between 5 and 9 o'clock this evening at Floyd Bennett Field. That's Central Standard Time. We're speaking, of course, which will be 2 hours later, Eastern Daylight Saving Time. There isn't a great deal of activity here on the field now. Everybody is beginning to leave. I have quite a crowd gathered around me. They're all interested in what I have to say, and I don't have much more to say than what they have seen. It's really been great to see this flight come in and go out, and the record time that they did it. And it was a record time. They landed at 7:38. The motors were stopped at 7:40. which gave them 28 minutes. From 28 minutes from the time the motor stopped until the time that they started their taxi to refuel, put in 750 gallons of gasoline in that giant Lockheed and drain 1.5 gallons of oil and clean the ship up, wash the windows, and make preparations for their trip to Lloyd Bennett Field in New York. This is Jack Hoffus of the Special Features Division of Mutual Broadcasting System and WDGY, signing off now from Old Chamberlain Field in Minneapolis. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.